Welcome to another episode of evolutionary.org. Up the ass. Up your ass. Hardcore. Raw. Podcast. We are live tonight from the evolutionary.org headquarters. This is your host, Steve Smee, with my host, Masonic Bodybuilder. And we have a great show ahead of you tonight, so let's get to it. How you doing, Matt?
I'm feeling awfully raw and hardcore after that intro, buddy. Ready to hit it.
Yeah. So the first thing we're going to do, guys, this is really cool. We have some new segments on the show. And the first segment we're going to do is our relationship segment of the night. So we're going to allow you to submit your emails on the air. Okay, this is going to be really cool. And I'm going to randomly pick one out. So go ahead and send them. I know you guys have your emails already prepared. I'm going to go in, randomly pick them. Then we're going to randomly pick out a cycle segment for our cycle segment. And then Matt is going to pick out the diet segment where we're going to fix your diet. So we're going to fix your relationship issue. Then we're going to fix your cycle. Then we're going to fix your diet. So it's going to be a really cool segment now we got out of the show. So boom, I just got an email here. Wow, I got like 30 emails, just bam, bam, bam. So let me pick out the first one that comes out. This one is for you, Matt. It says, "Dear Matt, I was dating a girl named Jen. She got pregnant and had a baby. I wasn't there for the birth because I wasn't convinced it was mine. Plus, I had a Madden tournament that day I could not miss. I am still not convinced it is mine, even though the paternity test came back 100% positive. In my defense, I warned her that if she had a girl, I was out, and she still goes and has a girl anyway. It was her choice, not mine. I can't afford any more lawyer fees or child support, so I told her I would raise this thing together. But she won't talk to me anymore or return my calls. All her friends and family are calling me a deadbeat dad, and it is upsetting me, and it is causing me to miss my workouts. What should I do now?"
Holy fuck, Steve. Where do you even start with that? That is a whole bunch of insanity. Okay. As I'm hearing that question, the first thing I'm thinking is, if you're not sure it's your kid, then a paternity test is probably in order. And the test is done, and it is your kid. So to me, that's where it ends. You want to put it in, you're going to be responsible for what happens if you don't wrap it up. So now you have a kid. So you need to man up, and you need to deal with that, and you need to grow up. At this point, your life is completely different. And it will be, and there's nothing you can do about that. And whether you want to raise the kid or not, you can choose to be a deadbeat. That's fine. You can disappear. You're still going to pay for that kid until it's 18 years old. And you can make it a messy, drawn-out, legal disaster for your life. Or you can get your shit together and realize that you just had a kid, or your girl just had a kid, and it's yours. And it needs a father. And you can choose to be there for it. I don't even know. Steve, you chime in. I need to get some thoughts together and I'll get back in.
Well, I'm curious what you think about really the crux of the question, which is he wants to raise it with her, but she won't return his calls anymore. I'm curious to hear what he can do with that. But yeah, I mean, this guy, lay off the drugs. You know what I'm saying? Like, make sure you're picking out the seeds out of your pot, you know? So, these types of questions, we hear a lot about on Father's Day, all the great fathers out there, and then all the shitty-ass fathers who the kids don't even know or whatnot. And in this case, think about it. For the next however many years, this girl on Father's Day is gonna view her father as a fucking deadbeat. So in my view, you know, I don't understand why people would have unprotected sex, get someone pregnant, and then not understand that if they did have a kid, that is a possibility. So to deny the child in the first place is retarded, okay? I don't care if the girl's a slut. I don't care. Did you or did you not have sex with her? Unprotected. Yes or fucking no. If the answer is yes, there is that possibility that it's your kid. Even if she was fucking 30 other guys, you made the choice to have unprotected sex with her. So there is that possibility. So I don't never understood the whole denying the kid part. Whenever you watch like Maury or something, the guy wants to deny the kid. And it's like, I wish Maury would ask the guy, man to man, did you or did you not have sex with this lady? And he'd be like, yeah, I did. Okay, well, it can be your kid. So why would you fucking deny it? And if it's not your kid, you know what? You fucking got lucky, all right? You fucking got lucky that you're not stuck with child support. So can you blame this woman for not wanting to be with you because you denied the kid this whole time, even with 100% paternity? You missed the birth of your daughter because you were playing a fucking Madden tournament. You were playing video games with your friends, so you missed the birth of your daughter. You are a fucking deadbeat. You are a fucking deadbeat, okay? Just fucking don't ever email us again, okay? Don't ever fucking turn this podcast again. We don't want you as a fucking listener on the fucking podcast, as far as I'm concerned. Get off my podcast!
Did I hear correctly? Did he say he was pissed off because she had a girl?
Yeah, it says, I warned her that if she had a girl, I was out, and she still goes and has a girl anyway. It was her choice, not mine. Like, you can't make a choice if it's going to be a girl or not. Like, this guy.
Little inside info for this guy. I've had four kids. They're all boys. And my wife and I will joke about this at time. The sex of a baby is 100% determined by the man. She had nothing to do with it. We're going to do something real unconventional right now on this podcast. We've never done this before, guys, so I don't know if the bosses are going to like it, but they're going to deal with it because I need to prove a point. We're going to get Mrs. Masonic Bodybuilder on the line because I'm sure she would love to say something about that, and she will confirm what I've just told you guys. So just give me a few seconds here. The line's ringing now, and hopefully she picks up. Okay, so we're gonna ask her because she's on the phone now. Say hi.
Hi.
Okay, so we had an odd relationship question today, and the guy is upset because his girlfriend had a girl as a baby. He's mad that she had a girl. It's his kid. So why is that wrong? We just talked about this. So he's pissed off because they're having a kid and it came out to be a girl, and he's blaming her. Who decides what sex the baby is?
The man.
What percentage? Is it like 50-50? Is it?
No, 100%.
Thank you. So that we had to bring in the expert on the subject just to clear that up. So I hope you guys take advice, because when a woman talks about something to do with children, she's right, okay? So you better listen to that one.
Yeah, that was great, Matt. You definitely confirmed it. So what's your final advice to this guy? Like, you know I went off on him. I hate fucking deadbeat dads. I hate people who don't take personal responsibility. So what is the final answer to this guy? Because the girl, he's saying, isn't responding to her. He fucked up. Let's say he wants to get his shit together. He gets, you know, he found a good job. Now he's making a little more money. How can he remedy the situation?
If he's legitimately, you know, feeling that way and he does want to work it out and he is going to grow up, because eventually most of us do grow up, it's actions. You got to just prove it. Don't talk. Don't run your mouth. Be a gentleman about it. Be humble. Just do your thing. Make sure you know, let her know. Don't let her forget that you want to, you know, do that. But just work hard at your job, work hard at being a man, and don't do any of that stupid kiddie shit you were doing, the, you know, video games and all that crap. Don't be partying, doing drugs, all that crap. Try to be a grown-up, act like it. And if she sees that, you know, that might be what she needs. She needs to know that you're a grown-up and you're capable of raising a family.
Yeah. Remember that movie Knocked Up? Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Well, in that movie, it was kind of like this. The guy was a loser. They had a one-night stand. She got pregnant. She had a baby. And she dumped the guy because he was a loser. He didn't have a job. He was on drugs. And then during the movie, he quit using drugs. And he got a good job. He got his own place. And he got his life together. And then they ended up together in the end of the movie. So it's like a fairy tale situation. But I think you need to prove this to her. And you need to grow up, like Matt said. I think that's something you're going to have to live with the rest of your life. When your daughter gets older, she's going to know that her dad missed her birth because he was playing video games. And that's what boys do. That's not what men do. So I hope you can mature into a man. And this is why kids shouldn't be having kids. You know, you should wait until you're an adult, a mature adult with your shit together before you have kids, you know? So, our next segment, your favorite segment, Fix My Cycle, Bruh. So we're going to talk about a cycle a forum member posted or emailed to us. So this is the one we got this week. This guy, he wants to run, this isn't his first cycle, he's run cycles before, and he wants to run a classic test EQ trend cycle, and this is his dosages. He's got test cyponate at 500 milligrams a week, EQ at 400 milligrams a week, and trend E at 400 milligrams a week, and he also lists he's taking Arimidex. And he's 13% body fat, and he's 5'8", 173 pounds at 40 years old. So he's definitely old enough to use steroids, first of all. His body fat is a good percentage to be using steroids and using trend. So let's kind of look at the cycle. Let me talk a little bit about the dosages, give my opinion, and I'll let Matt give his opinion after. The way I like to run trend is I like to run trend at no more than 250 or 300 milligrams a week. And the reason for that is because trend comes with tremendous side effects. The worst side effect that you're going to get on trend is those hypoglycemic side effects. So all those side effects are going to affect your sleep. They could affect your sleep. They're going to affect your mood. You're going to get cranky for being hungry. You're going to have a hard time sleeping. It's kind of like a baby. You know, a baby has a hard time sleeping at night. They're cranky. They get hungry a lot. You got to feed them all the time. They get tired during the day, and they get cranky over that. So when you're on trend, all those crankiness type of things happen. And so you're really running a high dosage of trend. 400 milligrams a week is an overdose, in my view. I think 300 or 350 is complete max. Like, anything higher is just going to increase your side effects exponentially. So really, like, with trend, even 200 milligrams a week is plenty. So I would drop your trend dose, first of all. I would also drop your test dose. 500 milligrams a week alone is a good cycle because you're getting those androgenic and anabolic effects. But when you're using trend and EQ as a stack with the test, the EQ is already your anabolic and the trend is already your androgenic. So why would you want to cause more anabolic and androgenic effects? You know what I'm saying? It's kind of overlapping each other, and it's just going to add the side effects. You're not going to get much benefits. You're just going to add more estrogen issues. So I would also reduce your test dose down to maybe a TRT dose, or down to zero. You know, let the EQ and trend do the work. And then with the EQ, if you want to run more steroids, that's where you can increase the dose. You can run the EQ at 500 or 600 milligrams a week. So that's how I would run it. It'd be a more mild cycle, less side effects. and I would swap out the Arimidex for Aromasin. Because Aromasin is a suicide aromatase inhibitor, and Arimidex is not. So that's what I would do. If you already bought the Arimidex, fine. You can run the Arimidex. But if you haven't yet, definitely swap it out for Aromasin. Matt, what else? What is your opinion on the cycle? What did I miss?
I think you could run it a couple different ways depending on what exactly you want out of it. So I think there's two really cool ways to do it. I think if you really like the way that EQ operates, the way that it gives you, you know, really good lean gains, it takes a long time, and that's your style, you like that, you like being patient, then in either of my options here, I do like the test lower, 200 to 300, I think is going to be plenty because you're going to have three compounds. But if you do like that EQ, I would say run the EQ higher, run it at, you know, 500-600 milligrams per week, because then you'll really notice that. That will really pull through. It's the compound you really notice as far as how you're gaining. And if you're going to do that, then I would probably keep the trend low. Keep it at maybe 200 milligrams per week. And the reason why that would be awesome is because you'll be already getting the nice lean gains from the EQ. The trend, you're not going to get a bunch of side effects at 200 milligrams. You'll probably, it'll be very tolerable. You'll still probably have a little bit where, you know, you're hot, but I don't think you'll have major issues sleeping on 200. I think you'll be good, but it will give you that extra kick, that extra aggression, nothing crazy, but it'll be there. Because EQ is not androgenic like that, right? It's a more mild compound. So if you're running, you know, lower test and EQ, which is mild, that trend in the background would be awesome. Like, it would really make you feel real good. It would just, you know, clean up those gains you're making anyways because it's so dry. So I think that's one way you could run it. I think the other way, kind of the opposite, instead of having the EQ as your main compound, if you wanted the trend to be your main compound, raise that up. I like 300 milligrams per week because I find even at that, I can have some issues sleeping. But everybody's different. So if this guy can run it up to 400, then, you know, I'll leave it at that range. I'll say 300 to 400, and that will be your main compound, right? That'll be, you know, the horse that's driving this whole thing. You'll still have your test at a low dose, 200 to 300, to have something there. And then the EQ, you can lower that then to say maybe, you know, 300 milligrams per week, somewhere around there, and keep it in there, kind of the opposite of what I described before. So instead of the trend being in the background, the EQ will be in the background. So it's a very long ester, so it'll help you, you know, keep adding these lean gains. But another thing it does, it also helps with endurance. And with trend, you know, hurting endurance, it's going to give you a little boost. It's not going to completely negate the effects if you're running 400 milligrams of trend. Don't kid yourself, but EQ will definitely help. There's other things you can use too to help out. But I think either of those two options are a good way to run it. I think if he runs it the way it is with the higher dosages, he's going to find that, you know, 6 to 8 weeks into it, it's going to be too much. He's going to want to wean down. And, you know, if he's running all long esters, it can be tough to do that when you're already that far in. I think if the side effects get tough, you're running that much gear, it's just a recipe for something to not be great. Even though the test would only be at 500, when you're running test with that much EQ and the way that trend can affect your gut too, I'm guessing I'd probably have some type of, you know, bloating issue, or I just wouldn't feel good. Even if I wasn't retaining a lot of water, I just feel like that much gear just, I don't know. It's hard to explain sometimes. You guys know the feeling though, when enough is enough and, you know, you're kind of just ready for it to end. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's where I'd end up, you know, running high dosages.
Yeah, that's a good point. I always tell guys, this guy actually wants to run this 12 weeks. I always tell guys, be flexible when you're running trend, because trend is the steroid. When you get on it, like the first few weeks, you're like, man, this shit's awesome. you know, my strength is up, I'm fucking, my muscles are huge, it's like, what the fuck, you know, I'm transforming my body. And then, like, once 5, 6, 7 weeks into it, you're like, fuck, I'm so sick of this shit. I'm sick of being hot all the time. I'm sick of being dehydrated. I'm sick of, you know, feeling these hypo symptoms. I'm sick of feeling shitty all day, you know, and you get sick of it. So be flexible. I would encourage you to consider dropping the trend. If the side effects become too much by week 8, drop the trend and just keep going with the EQ and a little bit of test. And then roll with that for 12, 14 weeks total. So be flexible with the trend. Don't be like, oh, I'm running at 12 weeks and I'm just going to stay for the whole 12 weeks. Even if that last 4 weeks is utter hell, I feel like shit, I can't sleep, I'm dehydrated, I'm tired, I'm too tired to even go work out. Doesn't make any sense. So be flexible with it and don't be afraid. It's always nice to have a plan when you're making a cycle. I'm all for having a plan. I'm all for having a blueprint. But with noobs, it's so funny because they'll mark on their calendar. I did this when I ran my first cycle. You mark on your calendar, okay, I'm going to inject this much steroids on Monday. Then I'm injecting this much steroids on Thursday. You mark it on your calendar. You lay your steroids out. It's like going to be precise and everything. That's all fine and dandy. But in the real world, it doesn't work like that because shit's going to happen during cycle. Maybe you get too much bloat and you're like, fuck, I got to cut off the testosterone. I'm getting too much estrogen issues or I'm getting too many androgenic issues. I got to cut down on the trend. So shit's going to happen during cycle. You really want to adjust. Those are the most successful cycles when you adjust your dosages if something is going wrong and also utilizing blood work. So that's important. So how do we, help with this cycle reduce side effects? You want to use your N2 guard. You want to use your cartarine. Those are going to help always with trend. You want to use those two. And then for PCT, use the perfect PCT. Did I miss anything else, Matt?
No, I think that's most of it. I know a lot of guys would probably on the forums just repeat it because they see it over and over again. You got to have Kaber. I don't think you need to necessarily have Kaber with, just adding in a little bit of trend. It doesn't hurt if you have it. It's not going to kill you, but it's very expensive. I wouldn't go, spending money on it unless you, have had prolactin problems in the past or you've abused trend like crazy. I don't think that's going to be necessary. But no, I think everything, Steve gave you guys is pretty good. Fish oil is another one that I would always take on any cycle. It's great for cholesterol levels. It just has so many benefits. And, a lot of us, other than Steve, don't eat enough fatty fish. And we really lack on our omega-3s. And the way food is today, it's so shitty compared to what it's supposed to be and how nature intended it. So I recommend everybody to be taking their fish oil, especially if you're running a cycle, because these things are tough on your organs, especially your heart.
Speaking of that, we have a new segment on this episode. It's called Fix My Diet, Bruh. And Matt, you got a question. You've been getting a bunch of questions tonight. Can you pick one out randomly and read it to us? And we're going to help this motherfucker out with his diet.
Yeah, I grabbed one quick and I like this one because it's specific. So if you guys like try to give us a specific question, if you just give me your whole diet and say fix it, it's kind of tough. Like we would need a whole show to do that. But I really like this one. So I'll just read it for you. It was an email that was sent to me. It says, hey guys, I'm wondering if you can help me out with my pre-workout meal. Here is an example of what I've been having. 2 peanut butter sandwiches, 1 protein shake with skim milk. I figure the bread gives me some carbs for fuel. Peanut butter is known as a bodybuilding food, so I want that. Protein powder for building muscle and skim milk for my shake, but so I can keep the calories lower than higher fat milk. The problem is that I've been feeling heavy and bloated while training. I feel like I'm hitting all areas with this meal, but I think it's time for a change. Fix my diet. So it's funny because if you took a poll or if you followed around a whole bunch of 16 to 18-year-old guys, I bet you this is very common. You know, peanut butter bread and protein shakes. That's probably extremely common. And it's cheap too, right? But I mean, there's so many things in here that are definitely causing the way that this guy is feeling. So I'm really glad he asked because it needs a complete overhaul. First of all, without even getting into the specifics, it's just too much food. It's just too much volume that's going to be in your stomach. I understand calories is probably what he's looking at. He's probably got his meals split up and this is just, you know, it fits in for him. But if you're eating that much food before you work out, it's going to be sitting in there and you're going to feel heavy no matter what kind of food that is. You know, it might even make you a little bit tired. You want your body to be focusing, you know, on moving the blood through the muscles, and you don't want all that blood pumping to your gut to help with the digestion. That's the first thing that's going to go on. I'll go through some of this. I'll leave some for Steve to talk about because he is really good on the dairy explanation and that. But the bread part I'll get into. Bread's not something you want to eat really at all in your diet, and especially before training, because it's very inflammatory. Even if you're not intolerant to gluten, even if you don't think you're sensitive to gluten, bread is still an inflammatory food. It's processed. It's not anything you want to eat. Look on that bag if you have bread at home and see how many ingredients are in that. It's a lot. There's a lot of shit in there. It's a very, very poor quality calorie. So as an example, if you want carbs, there's plenty of better carbs you can have than bread. And don't be fooled by whole grain bread and whole wheat bread. It's just as bad. It's not, you know, maybe it's slightly better, but it's not really any better than white bread. So, I mean, you can look at all types of fruits are going to be a good option. You can look at certain vegetables, like sweet potatoes are a really good one. You can look at oatmeal. You can look at rice. So there's a whole bunch of really good carbs that you could have. If you do want carbs, you don't necessarily need them. It will help with, you know, providing a better pump when you're training. But it's, you know, it depends on your goals. Peanut butter is, in my mind, it's not a good quality food in general. I don't think it should be part of most bodybuilders' diets. I get it that, you know, in quotes, it is a bodybuilding food because it's so high in calories. So it's easy to, you know, get your calorie intake higher. There's much better options if you really want a spread like that. You could go with a natural almond butter or something like that. But even then, I don't think that's something necessarily you want before training. I prefer not to have much fat if I'm going to have a pre-workout meal. I like to keep it extremely light. That's just me. I might have an apple and that's good enough. I'm done, ready to go. So I think anything that's high fat like that, it's going to digest very, very slowly. And I don't think that I want that while I'm training. I think I'd rather, you know, have something like a fruit that I can get in quick. I'm going to drink a ton of water beforehand and I'm going to be good. I think water is, you know, really important too, because it's so hard to catch up. If you're not hydrated going into your training, you're going to be constantly trying to catch up. You want to be hydrated before you go. So make sure you have a couple of glasses of water with your pre-workout meal. So why don't I let Steve take it over and talk about, he didn't list what kind, but he's protein shake with skim milk. So why don't you go into that and give us an alternative for that too?
Yeah. Like Matt said, guys, I mean, you're going into a workout. You definitely don't want to be bloated. So obviously you're going to have to make major changes to this, man. This is a mistake a lot of guys make. They don't understand your quality of your workout is very important. So if you feel like shit during your workout, you feel gassy, you feel bloated, you're not going to be able to push yourself, okay, with any type of exercise. This can make a world of difference. Like, you know, it's amazing how nutrition isn't preached enough. you know, before any type of exercise, sporting event, whatever, that can make a huge difference. I remember in high school playing football, before the game, you know what they would feed us? Pizza. They'd feed us pizza. And it's amazing, like, we would still, you know, play well. But if they would have fed us a healthy meal before our game, we would have played so much better versus pizza. But pizza's cheap, you know, so it's not like the school has money to go provide us with, like, an organic, you know, delicious, nutritious meal. So they're going to obviously just get pizza because it's cheap as fuck. You can buy the whole team pizza for, like, $50, you know. So anyway, in your situation, it's very important to keep in mind protein shakes are very inflammatory. You can try using a whey isolate, a good quality whey isolate. If you go to n2bm.com, they do sell one. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be out of the woods drinking a protein shake before a workout. I would not drink a protein shake before a workout. I would stick to water, like what Matt said. Water will not bother you. Water will hydrate you. Water is never a bad option. So stick to the water. If you need carbs before a workout, not everyone can train without carbs, you know. Some people are naturally hypoglycemic. I'd say 15% of the population needs some type of carb to get in a quality workout. I've kind of weaned myself off of having to depend on carbs. I can go into a workout fasted, in a fasted state, and still have a kick-ass workout. But, you know, some of you can't, fine, you know. Like Matt said, sweet potatoes are a very good option. A piece of fruit, like an apple, something like that, is a very good option. You don't want the apple. If you are sensitive to apples, like you have like acid reflux, some guys do. I know green apples give me acid reflux. Obviously, you want to avoid it. So you want to choose some other type of fruit. Cucumbers are very hydrating, and they're very, you know, easy on the body, and that's a fruit that you could consume. You know, banana is never a bad option, because bananas do have a lot of sugar, so those carbs and those sugars can fuel your workout if you need that sugar in your workout. So, you know, I would do that. I would definitely eliminate the protein shake and the milk. You don't want anything inflammatory in the body. Gluten from the bread, even if you're not celiac, gluten is still inflammatory. So I would eliminate that. You can try like a gluten-free bread if you want to try bread, but like Matt said, look at the ingredients. It's got so much shit in it, and that's not really helping you. So instead of the bread, definitely go with complex carbs. Brown rice, sweet potato, those are good options. A couple eggs is a good option. Make sure the eggs are high quality, obviously. You want to get pastured, humane-friendly eggs, and those are good. So I think a good pre-workout, just to summarize, you know, a couple eggs, maybe a bowl of oatmeal, sugar-free oatmeal, and a piece of fruit or a sweet potato. Can't go wrong with that. And, you know, see how you react. You shouldn't get bloated on that unless you're allergic to eggs. Some people are allergic to eggs. But other than that, you know, you shouldn't have any problems. So give that a shot instead. And remember, water is your friend. You know, enough with this Gatorade and protein shakes and all this crap, milk and all this stuff. You don't want to have that in your stomach before a workout. Just stick to water. Anything else to add, Matt, before we move on?
No, I think as far as the pre-workout meal, that we covered it really well. He didn't mention it, but it's kind of a side note to that. To keep, you know, kind of the idea we've been talking about, you want to feel light, you want to be fueled. Another thing that can put that down is if you're drinking things you shouldn't be while you're training, because the supplement companies push these products, right? They need to sell products. So now all of a sudden, when you're at the gym, look around and everybody's water bottle's got a different color drink in it. You don't need to be drinking these things while you train. You don't need a BCAA drink while you're training. It's just going to add sugar and crap like that. And it's just something else that could possibly cause you to not feel great while you're training. So it's not going to benefit you. You're eating before. Okay, so you already are getting some protein in your system. You're likely going to go home after the gym and eat again, or relatively soon. You're going to eat protein again. So you don't, it's not like you need to have protein nonstop every half hour or you're going to lose all your muscle. It's okay to just have water while you train, and you'll actually feel so much better if you do that. Just cold water is all you need. I think that pretty well covers it.
All right, Matt, yet another question, this time about injecting help. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, so it's a guy, he's doing his first cycle, and he just wants, I mean, he's watching videos. I think he mentioned it. I don't have his email in front of me, but he just wanted us to describe, each of us, kind of what our injection technique is, kind of from start to finish. So I can start and try to, you know, I'll kind of give you an idea of the way that I do it and what I find works for me. Everybody's going to be different. So, you know, just because this works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. But I'm on a pretty good schedule because I do have a family and, you know, a career, and everything's very, like, stable. So I pretty well run the same schedule every day. And what I do is I like to train in the mornings. So I will train, and when I get home, I will have my shower. So what I like to do is I will take the vial or vials that I'm going to pin with. I'll put them in a cup, and I will fill it up with hot water just out of the sink, not boiling, nothing like that, just whatever the sink goes to on hot. And I'll fill it until it gets to about halfway up on the vial, and I just leave it while I have a shower. So that sits there for maybe 10 minutes, just enough to get it nice and warm. And the reason I do that is because it makes the gear smoother to pin. It goes in quicker. It's a little bit easier. I prefer to do it that way. Another thing for me is showering. And I don't know if this is mental or not, but I feel like it loosens me up a bit so that when I get out and I'm ready to inject, I feel like my muscles are ready to accept it, as opposed to if I was cold or just sitting around. So that's kind of how I get started. And then what I'll do, I'll take the vials out of the cup, dry them off. I will wipe the tops off with, I use just little alcohol pads. You can buy them like that, or you can just buy cotton balls and a bottle if you prefer. So I wipe the tops off, and then I wipe the spot that I'm going to inject. So typically I pin my butt cheeks because I just find it the least painful. And it's just easy, just what I'm used to. But by all means, try any site. The more you have, the better. So I'll wipe that little spot off. And then while that's drying, sorry guys, while that's drying, I'll load up the syringes. And you don't want to pin immediately after you wipe the spot, because it will burn a little bit. Some of the alcohol actually will go into your skin and it will burn. So it only takes, 10 seconds probably to dry, but just something to note for a newbie. So then I load it up. I use an 18-gauge needle to draw. It's just quick, easy, goes right in. Combine oils, obviously, if you can. And then I'll switch over to, I prefer a 23-gauge. When I do ass cheeks, I'll either do 1 inch or 1.5. It doesn't much matter unless you really have too much body fat. You definitely want a 1.5. But if you're, you know, big like that, you probably shouldn't be using steroids anyway. So 1 inch or 1.5 is going to be good for glutes. Then I will do my injection. When I'm done, I leave it in for 20 seconds and I just stand there. And I don't know if it actually helps. It's just what I do. I've read that, you know, it's a way to, it'll kind of decrease the bleeding, or it'll make sure that none of the gear comes out, which I doubt it's going to anyway, because you're already injecting deep into the muscle. But that's what I do. I leave it there for 20 seconds. Notice I did not say aspirate, because I don't do that. It's something that's not part of my routine anymore. They don't teach it in medical school. They don't teach nurses to do it. I don't think it's necessary at all. So I don't aspirate. I think it only leads to more post-injection pain afterwards because you're wiggling around longer. So after I do that, I wipe off the spot with another alcohol pad where the, you know, the pin spot where you can see the little dot of blood. I just massage that for maybe 30 seconds and then I'm done. I think that's it. I'm good to go. Obviously, yeah. Dispose of things properly when you're done.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with Matt. I do the same thing with showers. A warm shower really gets that muscle loose. It gets it more ready to accept having a fucking needle go through it. And it is true. Versus just waking up in the morning and you're like, you know, walking around like a zombie and you sit down and want to inject yourself. Your muscles are like, whoa, you know, like this is the first thing you're doing to us in the morning? No. A nice warm shower, get the blood flowing, get the muscles loose, or after a workout is another good idea. And it does help. It does help your muscle accept the injection more. My advice for a noob, your first few injections, ice the top of your skin because that's where the nerves are. You don't want to ice the muscle, okay? Because that is counterproductive to what I just said. But if you ice the top of your skin, that's actually where the nerves are. So when the needle goes in, you won't feel anything. You see what I'm saying? So that's a good tip to try. And another tip is pinching the spot. You pinch the spot a little bit, kind of gets it kind of ready, gets the skin ready to kind of have a needle go through it. And it kind of, you know, helps. You can like pinch, do like a grab, just grab the muscle, inject, and then kind of let go a little bit. And it kind of prevents, you know, as much pain. So another tip is you guys have to rotate injection sites. Don't inject the same spot. You have to have at least 6 injection sites that you're rotating. Because if you don't, you'll develop scar tissue. And once you develop scar tissue, when you try to inject, you're going to like hit a wall. Because that scar tissue will be like rock hard. So you'll inject, you'll have to inject through a fucking brick wall. And that's not going to work. You know, as far as how big the needles should be, I recommend you get 2 types of needles. You get a 29 gauge half inch and you get a 25 gauge 1 inch. And with the smaller needle, the 29 gauge is the higher the number, the thinner the needle. 29 gauge are like insulin needles. So with those, you can inject a small amount of gear. If it's like less than 1 cc of gear that you're injecting, you can get away with using an insulin needle. But you don't want to make a habit of doing that. But yeah, you can get away with it here and there. But for most of your injections, you're going to want to use a 25 gauge because that's a thicker needle and that the oil will go through it a lot easier. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're using that needle for most of your injections. It's going to cut down on a lot of injections too because the needle, you can hold 3 cc's, up to 3 cc's in it. And, you know, one last tip. Some of your muscles, some of your areas, your body will not accept an injection. You'll notice that. Like for me, like my left quad, for some reason, hates being injected. Like every time I injected my left quad, I'll bleed or I'll have this crazy post-injection pain for days. It just hates being injected. But my right quad doesn't mind as much. And it's the same thing with my deltoid. My left deltoid doesn't care to be injected, but my right deltoid, I get crazy pip. I get crazy bleeding. So some of your parts of your body, just for some reason, maybe it's a mental thing, I don't know, but no, I do think it's something physical that they do not like being injected. So you wanna listen to your body, and if your body is saying, don't inject me in that spot, then find a different spot. So if you want to add anything else, Matt, or we can move on to your next topic.
Yeah, the gauge does another thing too. So the 25 gauge being a little bit smaller will actually – there's nothing you can do to prevent it. It will force you to inject slower, which is actually a good thing. You want to take your time. If it's your first, second, third injection – it's not going to be great because you're going to be a little shaky. You're going to be jiggling the needle anyways. But once you get a little bit better, it'll prevent you from wanting to rush. I use a 23 gauge. I can pace myself pretty good. Some of you guys will use a 22 gauge, and then you can really push that gear through quick if you wanted to, but that's a sure way to get some post-injection pain. So the 25-inch gauge, the great 25-inch, Jesus, the 25-gauge needle is going to be perfect because it will force you, you know, it'll force you to take a good 30 seconds to push that, you know, oil through anyway. So it's another way to, you know, it just helps you out. But no, we can move on if you're ready to go, Steve.
All right.
Okay.
Go for it.
Yeah. So we got a question from a guy. He's going to run an oral only cycle. And he asked us to not rip him for that, which he should know. We don't do that anyway. We're here to help you guys. We don't flame. But well, other than that first guy with the, you know, the deadbeat dad thing. But hey, he wants to run an oral only cycle, but he wants to know what are some good combinations. He doesn't want to just run one thing on its own. So there's a whole bunch of different ways you could go with this, and there's not going to be any right and wrong answer. It's going to be very goal dependent. And he didn't give us a goal, so we're going to go ahead and assume it's a first cycle, on top of it. So I guess I'll give you a couple. Steve can give you some. We can kind of talk about them and you can kind of choose what intrigues you and decide what you're going to run. And I'd encourage you to log it too. Keep a log at home, even if you don't want to post it up, but post it up on the forums for other guys to help you out with. The first one, and I'm just putting these together off the top of my head. Like I'm not doing a whole bunch of research and trying to make sense of it. This is just kind of something I would do if I was going to do it. So I thought about D-ball and Anavar. And you're probably thinking, what the fuck are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. One's wet, one's dry, you know, one's for cutting, one's for bulking. I get it. I get it, guys. But hear me out. This is why I would run it that way. I think that D-ball can be misunderstood. Yes, it's extremely wet. It is. But it's also, in my opinion, overdosed way too many times. Guys are running, and I'm not going to be ridiculous and say some stupid number. Guys are running 40 to 50 milligrams per day. That's way too much. You don't need that much. That's when you will get those side effects. So I would run it with this combination. I'd run 10 to 20 milligrams per day. That's it. Depending on the quality, 10 is probably where I want it to be, 20 depending on your lab, right? So 10 to 20 milligrams of D-ball, and I'd run the Anavar 20 to 40 milligrams of Anavar. And I think that D-ball at a low dose like that will give you just enough of an androgenic boost, that little kick that you want, you know, that aggression that you're going to want to feel. It's going to help you with your strength, with your size. It's going to be there. It's just not going to be there with all those crazy side effects. You're not going to blow up like a Hulk, per se. Anavar, it's going to be kind of the opposite. It's going to be dry. It's going to be subtle. But it's going to be very nice, lean gains. It's going to help you along the way. And also, by combining those two, you only have one that aromatizes. So you can still just run a very light AI. You know, you still need it, obviously. You're running D-ball. But Anavar is not adding on to what you need to run. So just a normal dose of an AI, Aromacin, 10 milligrams every other day. That's going to work for most people. That would be my starting dose. So I think that's a pretty good option there. I want to just quickly point out Anadrol, because Anadrol and D-ball get talked about and compared a lot. I don't like Anadrol in oral-only cycles because I think it's a little bit unpredictable unless you're very experienced. Then you know, feel free, toss it in because it's fantastic. But it does treat everybody differently. So I'm not going to use that in any of my examples just because I don't want anybody just starting off with that and then having issues. So that's my first one that I would suggest. Let me give you one more here. So I'll give you a cutting one. Anavar and Winstrol. I think when dosed properly, this can be a really, really good cutting stack. The key for me on this one is keeping the Winstrol dose lower than the Anavar dose. I think if you run them even, or if you run the Winnie too high, you're really going to run into those side effects of Winstrol that you don't want. And if you're cutting, I'm assuming you're doing a bunch of cardio, and you probably don't want the joint issues. They can really hurt you. They can hurt your weightlifting too, but you know, particularly bad with cardio. And Anavar, as I discussed already, is very mild, but it's great for cutting because it is dry. So I'd probably run that. I'd probably run the Anavar around 40 milligrams and the Winstrol around 20 milligrams per day. That gives you 60 total. That's going to be a pretty good dose. With both of these that I laid out, you're definitely going to need a liver support supplement. You're going to want to run your N2 Guard, 7 capsules per day, no less, because these are liver toxic compounds, right? So you want to be careful. Health is most important. Tons of water, too, will really help with the liver and the kidneys. Don't forget that. With the Anavar and Winstrol cycle, the great thing there is that you don't need an AI. They're both DHTs. They don't aromatize, so you don't need an AI. You may need a new hairline, though, but you won't need an AI with that cycle. So just be careful that your Anavar is legit, because we know how often it's faked. I don't have to tell you guys, but if you're not sure and you don't run an AI, and all of a sudden you got, you know, who knows what mixed in there, D-ball, something like that, now all of a sudden you're going to run into a whole bunch of other issues that you didn't anticipate. So you really got to be careful with your source when running these. And obviously, you know, you're going to need a PCT. You're going to need to run something. But I'll let Steve go through his couple, and then we can kind of touch on what PCTs we would recommend if you're just running orals.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with oral-only cycles, guys. You see some gurus online. I don't know, they come up with this idea that, oh, you shouldn't run an oral-only cycle. You know, where do they come up with this shit? Like, that's my question. Like, hormones are hormones. It doesn't matter if you're taking an oral or injectable. The only difference is orals are – they have shorter half-lives. They have shorter detectable times. You know, they're in and out quicker. Injectables are more long esters. So you can run, like, long cycles with them, and they don't, you know, damage your liver like some orals do. So with orals, I do have some rules with orals. My rules are this. If you're running Anadrol, Superdrol, Halo, these very harsh and potent orals, do not stack them with other orals. That's my rule, because they're so harsh on your liver that stacking them with other steroids are just – with other oral steroids are just going to strain the shit out of your liver, and that's not good. You don't want to have a strained liver. They're also so toxic – that stacking them makes absolutely no sense either. So if you're going to run those alone. My second rule with orals, don't stack two aromatizing orals together or estrogen dangerous orals together. Anadrol is a DHT derivative. It doesn't aromatize into estrogen, but it does bind to estrogen receptors. Dianabol aromatizes like fucking crazy, okay? Those two, don't run them together. Whatever you do, do not run those together. Those are one of my rules. Any aromatizing oral, do not run them together. What I like to do is the D-bol, T-bol cycle. 20 milligrams of each. Because the D-bol aromatizes and the T-bol is dry. So they kind of yin and yang each other. So if you're going to stack orals, stack ones that yin and yang each other and don't overdose on them. Proviron is not liver toxic. Oral Primo is not liver toxic. So those are safer to stack with other orals because they're not going to strain your liver. So those are my rules when it comes to that. I'll let Matt touch on PCT really quick, and then we're going to go back to talking about Winstrol to end the show.
Yeah, I think just quick, guys, if you're going to run Oral Primo, it can go with anything. It's not liver toxic. It's mild. But as far like just the economics of it, you're going to have to run like 300 milligrams per day. So it's going to be awfully pricey. But it is good in that regard. And Proviron, you can run that shit with anything. That can be run with anything, and it's going to only help out. So I think those are great options. The one thing we forgot to mention completely, I don't know how this slipped my mind, is cycle length. Because 90% of these are liver toxic, depending on the degree of it, depending on what you're running, I'm going to say I wouldn't run them anymore. My range would be 4 to 8 weeks, depending on what you're doing. If you're running Superdrol, don't run it more than 4 weeks. If you're running Anadrol, 4 weeks is going to be fine. If you're running Anavar and Winstrol, maybe you could push that one to 8 weeks. But don't think you can run these like 12 weeks. I mean, you can. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to be in this game long term and for the health of your liver, keep these cycles short the way they should be. 4 to 8 weeks, do everything properly. You will still need a PCT. I don't think you're going to need the full perfect PCT like we, you know, recommend for longer injectable cycles. I would definitely still run my HC Generate ES. That's going to be probably the most important compound. I'm probably going to run 2 bottles. So that'll last me 8 weeks. That's going to be huge because you're going to feel awesome while you're coming off and your test is recovering. That's going to be so important. And I'd probably just run Clomid with that. I wouldn't run it crazy high, though. I'd run maybe 25 milligrams per day for 4 weeks, depending on how harsh your cycle was. You can extend it out a couple more weeks, but cut that dose in half. You don't really need to be running Clomid super high, but that's probably it. I don't know. Steve, would you add anything else to it?
When you're running a short oral cycle, guys, you can keep your PCT short as well, and you can go a little because you're not shut down for a long period of time, and then the esters are out of your system quickly, so your body's going to start recovering, you know, quicker. It's not like running an injectable cycle where the esters are in your system 5-6 weeks. So yeah, a quick PCT, like Matt mentioned, will be fine. And then, you know, we just have a couple minutes. I just want to talk about Winstrol. A lot of people, they'll ask, hey, I want to get faster. I want to, you know, do endurance. I want to do a lot of cardio. You know, what should I take for that? And a lot of self-proclaimed forum gurus will chime in and they'll be like, oh, I'll take Winstrol. And their reasoning is, you know, oh, Ben Johnson used it. So it should be great for sprinting and great for running, right? Because Ben Johnson got busted for it. Well, you know, that's like such an ignorant thing to say. And it's actually going to fucks up so many people. And it's really, really bad advice. And it drives me fucking crazy because I was an endurance athlete. And I actually ran on D-Bowl and Winstrol before. And I'll tell you, 3/4 of a mile, your calves are fucking feeling like they're about to explode. All right? Your lower back has these horrible pumps. So how the fuck can you run when your calves feel like they're going to explode and your lower back feels like someone's just hit it with a baseball bat? These steroids give you crazy fucking pumps, guys. It makes no sense to tell someone to use them to become a faster runner. The way you become a faster runner, I'm going to let you in on the secret. You guys ready? Is run more. That's the secret. It's not taking Winstrol, all right? So stop with the fucking stupidity and stop with the ignorance of actually thinking that you can just take Winstrol and become an Olympic sprinter just because Ben Johnson got busted for it, all right? He got busted for it. That doesn't mean that it helped him be an Olympian, all right? Just because someone gets busted for something, just think logically, guys, about shit. Matt, you have anything else to say? We're out of time.
Yeah, Ben Johnson didn't actually prefer Winstrol. He preferred Firazabol, which we don't even talk about anymore. It's an old, outdated steroid, but it wasn't even his drug of choice. And if you actually look into some of the interviews and read what he said about it, if he actually explains why he used it. And I'll tell you, it's not to get faster. He said he preferred to use Winstrol because it made his body, in quotes, feel tight. He liked to feel tight. It was a mental edge for him. He doesn't once in his interviews or in his articles or anything say, I took Winstrol because it made me faster. So just something for you guys to, you know, kind of put in the back of your mind. The pumps would be ridiculous if you were running this shit all the time for speed. It just doesn't make sense.
Another great show, guys. Keep the questions coming. Remember, I mean, we love you guys. Matt and I both, we love you guys a lot. We really want you to succeed at this. So come on the forum, you know, and we'll definitely help you get your, you know, whatever goals you have. So, again, we'll talk to you guys next time. Thanks for listening.